City Lights is a community of faith in Jesus, seeking to equip people to exalt Him and extend His kingdom. This message is from our study through the Gospel of John called Believe, Jesus Changes Everything. If you are encouraged and challenged by this message, please share it with someone, post it on social media, or let us know by leaving feedback on our iTunes podcast.
Well, how many of you are familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality test? Raise your hand if you're familiar with that. Raise your hand if you have taken that test. Raise your hand high. All right, on the count of three, yell what your four letters are. One, two, three. EMTJ, it sounds like lockjaw. Somebody has lockjaw over there. All right, if you're not familiar, ultimately, I mean, you can do this. I think it's like personalitysomething.com. Maybe don't type that in, but just type in Myers-Briggs if you're interested in this, and you can get a personality assessment. And it just helps you understand what your tendencies are. For instance, that first one is either E for extroversion or I for introversion. And it can be kind of awakening and sobering to see how you are profiled. I'll say for my journey and what I looked at, it was spot on for me, and most everybody I talked to is pretty spot on. The reason I'm sharing this, by the way, stick with me, is because I really believe that one of the discrepancies in the Gospels, the life of Jesus, actually has a lot more to do with personality differences than it does the power of God or truth. I think people get stuck on personality, meaning their own and others, and we kind of go in with predetermined judgments. I know this about myself. Now that I understand my personality more, I realize why I've looked down at people in the past, because I'm like, my way is the best way. I didn't know that I thought that. I didn't know that I would have said that. But now I realize that's exactly what was going on, and vice versa. So I think other people have looked at me the same way, potentially. But this is what's pretty comical. There have been people who have taken the Myers-Briggs testing and looked at those personalities, and they have actually charted different TV shows, different movies, comic books, you name it, and they have attached who those personalities are most like. So if you know your four letters, you get to see where you fit in things. I think the first one we have is the Muppets. You ever wonder? You probably haven't. Like, I wonder what Muppet I am. And just in case you're like, I want to be Miss Piggy, or like, I want to be Kermit the Frog, whatever it might be, you can look up on here and see who you are. I'm pretty sure I'm ENFP, so I'm like that guy with the beard that I can't grow right there. So that's an example of it. You can see that. Let's just scroll through them. Here are different Disney characters. I know mine. I'm Peter Pan. Timothy, aren't you this snooty-looking guy right here? You introverted, intuition, thinking, judging. Ooh, the mastermind. Excuse me, mastermind. Pretty nice. MASH, just I was thinking of, you know, people who like to watch the oldies. So here's MASH, if you know your four letters. The Hobbit, just in case you're curious. So I think I'm a female on that one. Yep, I am. That's good. And then if you keep going, Marvel Comics, it's really fun. I choose to be Thor out of all the... Oh, wait, that's not me. I'm over here. I haven't seen that before. This is happening in real time. I don't want to look at that. All right, so there's Marvel. And then we have actual historical figures in cartoon versions. Timothy, I believe you're Einstein, so you're moving up. That's good, Master. I'm Oscar Wilde up there. And then we have Harry Potter, just in case you're wondering who you are on there. Because I know that some of you watch movies and you're like, that's totally me. Maybe because they're like so dashing or hero, or they're so long-suffering. But it'd be interesting to see actually where your personality lines up. So those things are interesting for sure. Here's Star Wars for some of you buffs, just in case you're curious about some of those. That's enough. I kept researching on this, and it was very interesting because I was very curious, what is Jesus' personality type? Now, for the postmodern, or like the Jesus juke, or like the church trump card, or the Christianese, somebody wrote like, Jesus is all of the personality. So he's like E and I, and he's J and T. And so I'm not saying that he's not, but, and I think Paul even mentioned that. I'll just try to defend them for a moment. Paul did say, become all things to all people, that you might meet them where they are and win some, meaning that you match emotion, you match personality, so that you don't get in the way of somebody's breakthrough. Now, I will say this, part of the worship arts here that you see on a Sunday morning or Friday night, we genuinely truly try to provide a distraction-free environment for you to really exalt Jesus and encounter his presence. It really is our goal. And so, sincerely, I remember somebody asked me a couple years ago, and they just said, I know that That's the way you preach, or that's the way you like things, or that's the songs you like. And I said, what makes you think that? They go, well, because you're the lead pastor of the church. And I go, oh, Sunday morning stage is not an expression of Chris Armfield as the lead pastor. Those aren't necessarily all the things that I prefer or that I like. And someone's like, what are you talking about? Why don't you do that? I was like, because it's not mine. This is a genuine process where many people are praying through the week what God wants to say and how he wants to say it, and we're obedient to learn those things and present them to you. Now, we're not just saying, like, God, what do you want to say to Peter out there, and what do you want to say to Justin? What do you want to say to Jenny? We do ask those questions eventually, but ultimately we're saying, God, what are you saying about yourself, and how can we best understand you? And then, Holy Spirit, would you help us understand that difference between us and you in that way? Well, just in case you've ever been curious, most people believe that Jesus' personality type is this one right here, INFJ. He's that guy with the gray beard right there. And it's interesting, I started to think about that personality type, and then I kept studying, and somebody actually put Myers-Briggs testing to every biblical character in the scriptures. And they went through the Myers-Briggs testing for every New Testament book of the Bible. And they actually charted it out, and the Bible and the New Testament, from their understanding and how they figured it, was more on the side of thinking than feeling. So people who are in the scriptures, it presents more thinkers than it does feelers. I'm not going to ask you to describe which one you are, but it was interesting when I started to think about that. Becca, could you put up that list of just the New Testament books? Right here you see on the left side is how many times thinker sentences are in there, and on the right side is how many feeler statements there are. And so you've got a total of 1,003 between the New Testament and 606 feeling statements in there. So that's a pretty decent thing. One thing that was also really funny to me is John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. John is my favorite of the accounts of Jesus, and John is the most feeler-oriented book in the New Testament. So just in case you didn't know, I am a feeler. It is interesting, I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and it was all heavy think, thought, intellect, study. And so for 15 years, I was made to and chose to practice deep study, and that was the end all of spirituality, was study, 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 study. So I feel like I had a baptism of 15 years of all the feelings being drowned, and then I came up for air like, I can feel, this is okay. I didn't get high pitch. Well, I probably did get high pitch on that because I'm a feeler and I express. But it's really neat, even as I look back for those 15 years, sometimes in my own journey, I was like, God, why am I in this place? I know you have me here, but the things that I hear and see and value, I'm not sure that the mind is the end all. Where's the expression? Where's the heart? Where's the passion? And I was, my wife used to describe me the years I was pastoring in Presbyterian churches. They said, they love you in spite of your gifts, Chris. They think like, oh, that's sweet. He's real excited about things. And they appreciated the teaching because you have to really teach and understand the scriptures well for them to even listen to you. But they would put up with my emotions. And I remember when I finally, our family moved to Fellowship Greenville after that first year there, she said, Chris, I think they love you because of your gifts, not in spite of them anymore. And I went, oh, that's how I feel, baby. Yes, I was in touch with my feelings, and she had a good statement about it. So I thought these two things, and I put the conversation with Nicodemus in John chapter 3. And I actually looked at Nicodemus's personality type and Jesus's, because I will say this, when Jesus and Nicodemus, just in case you're not familiar, it's the passage where Jesus said, if anybody wants to have eternal life with God, you have to be born again. And Nicodemus challenges it and says, you're telling me I have to crawl back into my mother's womb? And it's just like a weird, strange response. And I thought, like, what a weird response. What personality type is Nicodemus? Here's his personality type. It's Spock. So it totally makes sense now. Imagine Jesus, this incredibly accommodating person who wants people to understand. If you've never watched Star Trek, you know that, like, Spock, he's kind of like Sheldon Cooper on Big Bang Theory. It's sort of like, what? You're too literal. And that was one of Nicodemus's major issues. So I want to start by just simply saying this. I do think that our personality presents us in a direction right when we walk in the room, when we say hello to somebody, when we walk into a space, when we go to work, when we get in traffic. Your personality has already predetermined so many things. This is not excusing your personality. This is not just saying, well, this is just who I am, and then even putting a bigger Trump card, not Donald Trump card, but like a bigger authoritative card saying, and this is just the way God made me, so just put up with it. You know, I'm critical, and I'm just going to judge everything you do, and it's going to help you because you're going to see all you're wrong. Like, that is an overextension. It's an over-exaggeration of the way God's used you, and you're using something that God's given you in a personality as a way to wound other people. Jesus was fully meek. He was fully under control with all that he knew and all that he said. So when you look at Nicodemus or Jesus, or you understand your personality types, My question as we start, because I really believe that's what's happening in this passage, is are you aware of how you tend to view the world around you? And if we're really transparent, I'll lead the way in that way. I know what my preferences are. I'm looking forward to Friday because there isn't an end time on worship. That's what I love about Thursday prayer. 2 weeks ago, we went for 4 hours. We planned for two and went double. I loved that. We only stopped because we looked around and like, we think that's what the Lord wants to do tonight. Are we done? We're done. All right, good night. And so I know some of you are like, ooh, thanks for letting me know that. I'm not coming on Thursday. In the past, I judged you. I'll just be blunt. In the past, I judged you and said, you're not spiritual. You don't love God. And they're like, why would you say that? Like, because you can't go for 5 hours in worship and you don't like singing and praying and you don't like yelling and doing all these fun things and you don't even know how to dance. You know, and they're like, how dare you judge me? And I used to, I'm just being confessional with you. I didn't even realize that I was being judgmental because I was living within the way God made my mind, but it was constantly coming down like judgments on others. So this is not about psychological and self-assessment and self-realization this morning, but what I want to say is this. Sometimes we read the scriptures, and if we're not careful, we see things that we really like, and we cling to them, and we use them as justification for what we want to do, or we use it as weapons to wound those who do things different than us. It's not what the scriptures are for. The scriptures are meant to lead us into relationship that is pure and holy and right with God, that we might understand more of who we are in his presence. The more we understand him, the more we understand ourselves. So this is not about personality, but what I do want to say is, as I've read back through the scriptures and understood the scriptures for what they're saying, I realize that a lot of the conflicts are actually because people got stuck on themselves rather than getting outside of their personal tendencies. That's why Nicodemus, because he's like Spock, and he said, I got to get in the womb again. And Jesus is like, you know, Jesus says, I'm talking to you about things here and now, earth. How am I ever going to talk to you about the glories of heaven if you can't even understand this? Do you realize that being reborn in Jesus' mindset and his personality that he was speaking of, he was talking about the here and now, not some other time and place? Isn't that, it's stunning to me to go like, okay, well, what was your next sentence going to be? If that was an earthly teaching, Jesus, give us a heavenly one. But we don't get to it because Nicodemus is like, now where is my mom? She's not going to like me wanting to get back in her womb. And he's like, oh, brother, you're missing this. How are you getting to this place? John chapter 10, verse 31. Right after he had finished teaching about him being the good shepherd. And it, by the way, let me give you a little context. I'm not going to do a huge review. If you ever want the message prior, because we go in context, just go to iTunes, type in City Lights. We're probably one of the first three things on there. You can download messages so you can get it in context. But right before this moment, a man who had been blind through his whole life, he's probably late teens, early 20s, blind his whole life. Jesus heals him, opens his eyes. And when this man eventually comes to Jesus, and Jesus actually finds him and says, hey, you know, I heard you got, because your eyes are open, that it's brought about suffering. Like, your eyes are opened and your church threw you out because it happened in ways that they didn't budget for. And I think those were personality and preferences and judgments they had previously made, because a blind man now sees and it never happened before, and they throw him out of the church. Very strange. And then the family is so nervous about losing their social status that they actually say, ask him, don't ask us about how this happened. So they shun him. And eventually, basically, all of his religious and all of his social interactions, he's ostracized from all those. He can finally see, and everybody he sees is not wanting to be with him. And then Jesus hears about this, and he goes and finds him. And he says, hey, you know, I've heard things have been really rough for you. And he goes, well, yeah. And Jesus basically says, do you believe that the Messiah did this? He goes, you know, I do believe that somebody made me whole like this. I don't know who it is. And Jesus says, I'm that guy. And in that moment, this man believes, and it says that he worshiped. And what that means is he went like this. When this whole conversation happened, that man laid face down. And just, in the Greek original language, it means like a dog licking a hand or a foot, prostrate down. And so this is what just happened. And so Jesus is teaching about that, and then he goes on to talk about how he's a great shepherd. So he's teaching. There's a miracle that happens with the man's eyes, and then he teaches and says there are some people who aren't for your good. They say they're for your good. They're saying they're there to help you, but they're really trying to steal, kill, and destroy things that are valuable to you. Those are not real shepherds. He said, I'm a real shepherd, and I lay my life down for you. After he's done teaching this, his audience, verse 31, the Jews who were listening picked up stones again to stone him. So this is early in Jesus' ministry. I think he's only done 3 miracles to this point in his ministerial time. And they are going to stone him again. Let me just refer a few passages. John 5:18 will be on the screen. I'm not teaching on them, but this is the first instance. This is why the Jews were seeking to kill him all the more, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, meaning they had an idea of what could happen on like a holy day, a day set apart for God. I'm not going to get into Sabbath, but there is a podcast about Sabbath. We taught all about that a few Christmases ago for a month. But they had an idea like, you can't do this and you can't do this. For instance, like you couldn't even like pick something up on a Sabbath day. And so a man who was crippled and couldn't walk, Jesus said to him, hey, why don't you pick up the mat that you're sitting on and walk? And they said, like, how dare you pick up your mat on a Sabbath day? And the guy goes, I was crippled and couldn't walk, and you're concerned that I'm carrying my yoga mat with me? And so these people were, again, focused on their law that they couldn't see, like heaven's law breaking earth's dysfunction. And so it happens again. So this is one point where they wanted to kill him in that regard, not only because of the Sabbath breaking, but because he was calling God his own paternal father, which they interpreted as making himself equal with God. John 7:19, has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keeps the law. Why do you seek to kill me? So Jesus knows their intent. This happened in chapter 5 and 7, and then chapter 8 happens twice. Verse 37, I know that you are offspring of Abraham. Talking to these people saying, yes, you are descendants of the true people of God. You are right about who you believe yourself to be. Yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. He's like, you say that you're from God and his family, but you're trying to kill me because you don't receive the way I'm teaching. And listen, sometimes they didn't receive the way he was teaching, the way he did miracles. I mean, most of the conflict in this point, 10 chapters in, one of their biggest issues was, you shouldn't be healing on a Sunday. For them, it was a Saturday. That's the hill they decided to die on. Do you realize that it is possible for you to create a system of whatever, anything from this is how you should do business, this is how you should do family, this is how you should do exercise. I mean, I hear about it. I've been off social media for over a year now. Instagram and Twitter is my last things over a year ago. Facebook, I've been off for years and years and years. But so I don't hear it, but I watch and I counsel people who get so flustered and so bent out of shape with what people are saying. Because if you're having a baby and you don't feed that baby every time they are crying, then you are not a good mother. And if you're a mother who doesn't breastfeed but gives milk, you're not a good mother. And you're only, I've heard that. And so I've had to sit with poor women who are going, am I bad because? I'm like, no, stop. Why are you letting them decide? Well, because they're so convicted about this. Or, oh, CrossFit's the only way. Oh, no, CrossFitters aren't the only way. You've got to go to Orange Theory. Oh, no, it's not Orange Theory. It's UFC. That's where I go. It's UFC. And if you don't go there, like we tend to create our own systems that are working for us. And we leverage it and say, that should also be working for you. I'll just go on confession again. I didn't know it was Chris Armfield Confession Sunday, and I don't want to dominate this, but I did that to my spouse for years with spirituality. I did. You want to know the person who suffered the most with my spiritual journey? When I went to a professional counselor and talked to him about my marriage issues, about 30 minutes in, he goes, hey, I figured it out. I go, what? And he goes, you are self-righteous. And I went, am I paying you to say this? Like, what is the deal? And he goes, well, you might call it pride, but underneath your pride is self-righteousness. And you have literally placed your spiritual map that works so great for you, and you've placed it on your wife and said, why won't you go the path I'm going? Because it's so effective. And I think if you ask my wife, there's been a growing change in me since that day. And I hope she would say, after 18 and a half years of marriage, she'd go, I feel more respected, honored, and admired by my husband in the last 5 to 7 years than I did the prior. Listen, I was blind. I would never want to hurt her. That's so counterproductive. But I was totally blind to it. And I just want to say in a loving way, I bet you have some blind spots too. And I bet you have blind spots about breastfeeding or bottle. I bet you have blind spots about how much people pay for cars or don't own a car or they rent or they buy or length of this or blah, 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 blah. I'm not discounting those, but I want to say this. I don't want to, I'm not, if you've been to this church, you know that I don't meddle into those things. I think they're so secondary. Actually, the place between Christ and all this other stuff is so far. I do believe the Spirit eventually speaks into those things if we listen. But I do think that even in this room, we have built up our idea of how God is worshiped, how the Bible should be read, how God's kingdom should be presented, what forgiveness looks like, the timetable of somebody forgiving you should be, who should be the first to make a move. Gossip really isn't this, it's more like this, and if you do this and this, then it's okay if that happens. I don't need to go on and on and on, but what I'm saying is those things are all things that Jesus talked about, and they matter. So this isn't a law message. That's not what I'm saying. However, there is a way of the kingdom of God on earth that Jesus clearly indicates. And if that's the case, then the Holy Spirit would ever lead us into that kind of expression. Jesus was doing this, and four times now, the most religious people in that city tried to kill him. So in this moment, they grabbed stones, but it would be like South Carolina, and you didn't know that people were packing, and all of a sudden they just pull out Glocks and revolvers all over the place and switchblades and nunchucks, and they're all like, keep teaching, keep going, man, come on, let's go, let's do this. That's my nunchuck movement. Literally, so you're like, oh, they picked up rocks, like what's gonna happen? That's how they killed people. One of the ways they would kill people is put this person who had transgressed maybe the law, and Jesus taught, you guys don't know the law, you don't know the law, and they were leveraging what they believed God had said and done on earth, and they were putting it on Jesus, and he's like, you guys, you don't have a clue. You've totally misinterpreted all these things. And one of the main things that they had major issues with is Jesus did things on the wrong day at the wrong time and hung out with the wrong people because they thought if the Messiah comes, if God comes to earth, he's going to hang out with us. He's going to say, great job. Not only did you follow the 10 laws that God gave you, but you also added 700 more to them. Well done, you law-creating human. But he didn't. He was the embodiment, we'll see in the passage, John chapter 1, verse 14 says, he was the embodiment of grace and truth. And we're going to talk a lot about that. But do you see, Jesus, I hope we can understand it. As a church, we do believe that Jesus is the most normal human in history. Why? He's a radical. Heavens, no, he wasn't a radical. He was a rebel. No way! God created everything. It's all his. So if he was a rebel and a radical, that means he was completely doing that to the audience of God. No. He was perfectly normal because he trusted his Father in heaven at every single moment and checked in with him and followed him and loved him so much that his Father looked at him and said, that's my son who I'm well pleased. That's why we know he's a perfect sacrifice. That's why we looked at him and go, you're the man. We don't go, oh, you're the example I have to follow. We go, wow, you've done it all, so now I'm free now to follow you. And some people have done that with their system of faith. They're like, wow, Jesus did it all, so I don't have to do anything, so I'll just go back and do whatever I want. And there have been revered theologians who are quoted saying that. To follow Christ is to love God and do whatever you want. To forsake asking God what you might want to do. I would make a very clear biblical argument if you stay through the whole study of John over the next year or two. You'll see that Jesus actually says over and over again, they say, why do you do what you do? He goes, I don't do anything on my own initiative. Worship style? Oh, do you think healing on the Sabbath was my idea? No. Everything I do, when I saw that man, he was interacting with, he says, everything I do, everything I say, everything I think is because I'm in relationship with God, the Father, and he shows me to do it, and he tells me to do it, and says, and he does that in a submissive way. Not that he's a robot. He says, it's my joy to please him. It's my joy to honor him. I love him, and so I will lay my life down as a good shepherd, and I will take it up and defend the sheep from those who are coming to try to attack. I will not use my freedom to be who I am as a license to do my will. I'll use my freedom to ask God what his will is, and I will exercise my freedom to do that. So if that means I forego a right or freedom, I'll do that. And if it means I can pick up this right and pure freedom, it doesn't offend anybody, I'll do that. And we're a church that wholeheartedly believes that. The only reason I nuance that for this moment right now is because I continue to hear waves of people struggling in our city because they're wounded by people's actions or inactions with the gospel. And I just want to say it again, we can't afford to lose the grace or the truth of Jesus. He never had one on and one off. When he wanted to be a truth teller and a clarity giver to people, he didn't divorce grace. And when he wanted to extend grace to people, he didn't compromise truth. So we're just going to trust his way and let the cards fall where they may. Down by the bay. Listen to what I say. All right, so verse 32. Jesus answered them, I have shown you many good works from the Father. I've shown you many good works from the Father. For which of them are you going to stone me? So they would publicly shame somebody. They would dig some sort of hole usually and put somebody in there. They'd put a large stone on their chest so they couldn't get up. And then they would find as big a stone as they could and they would literally stand over this person and try to crush their skull and every part of their body. I mean, they're just getting mashed up to death. That's what they're about to do to Jesus. And he says, I've done good things in your sight, which are from the Father. So which one of these are the reason you're picking up your weapons? The Jews then answered, it's not for good work that we're going to stone you. All right, so yes, you opened the eyes of that blind man who was blind forever. You pardoned a woman who was caught in the act of sexual adultery, And you did that by saying, hey, if any of you are innocent, then go ahead and pull out your weapon and shoot her. But if any of you have ever broken the law, and historically, if anyone was guilty of adultery themselves, they couldn't even bring up the accusation, let alone the punishment, historically and contextually. And it was a botched trial. We taught on that. You can get that podcast. But Jesus defends in the right way. He wasn't justifying adultery or saying, give her a second, third, fourth chance, or I'm only going to embody grace. He was the perfect order of law and grace. And if you study history, you'll go, wow, he fully was representing the actual law, the law of the land, the Greenvillian law. But he also represented the law that they are wrong in their hearts and grace that she was due. Because he pardons her sins before she even speaks. He knew her heart. Stunning. And this is the stunning acts that we, the church, get to extend. We're not stoning you because the blind eyes open. We're not stoning you because of the pardoning and forgiveness of sins of the adulterous woman. And we're not stoning you or wanting to stone you because of the crippled man who now walks, who didn't have anything interesting to do with you. He didn't even come back to worship you or even accept you like the blind man did. Just because you receive a miracle doesn't mean you'd be more faithful, by the way. As miracles and signs and wonders and healings have broken out in our church in the last year and a half, I haven't seen people be more faithful or read their Bible more or share the gospel more. I have seen some tremendously grow because a lot of their breakthroughs happened at their moment of salvation and their lives changed. But I just want to say, I've started to take notes and say, what happens in an aftermath of a miracle? And I do think that you see in the scriptures that the man who was crippled didn't want anything to do with Jesus. The man who was blind, as far as I'm concerned, is still laying at Jesus' feet kissing him. So massive change could come from those moments, but it's not guaranteed. So that might look like for you, well, if I could just see Jesus like the way people talk about it, if I could just hear heaven's music, if I could just see an angel's wing, then I. If you take the biblical story from the book of Genesis to Revelation, it's not like that. It doesn't always work like that. Some people had, like Pharaoh. Moses came in and said, here's what's going to happen today unless you change your mind. Boom, it happens. Boom, it happens. Boom. 10 plagues, 10 signs of God, 10 unnatural, 10 supernatural signs. And you think, oh my goodness, if someone was able to come in and speak with that kind of accuracy and then speak for God and these things happen, and then when I beg them to stop, they can stop in an instant. It's like, oh, I believe. Pharaoh doesn't believe to the point where he's at the bottom of the Red Sea dead. Even though every single thing that God was trying to present to him to change his heart, he would not change his heart. And then there's others like the blind man who didn't even ask to be healed, who gets, Jesus spits on the dirt, puts it in his face. The guy's blind, didn't even know it's coming. All of a sudden he's got mud in his face and a voice says, go wash. So blind man, go find the pool to go wash in. Opens his eyes, goes and tells everybody, church casts him out, family casts him out, everything he's known, he's seen everybody's face for the first time and they're all shaming him. Jesus hears about it, goes and finds him and says, who are you? I'm Jesus, the one who healed you. He goes, that person's believed and they're saved, and we find him worshiping. The difference between Pharaoh and that guy, there's a big difference. We want to stone you. We're pulled out our weapons because you're blaspheming. You are, blasphemy is you're speaking wrong. You're making something that is true wrong. You're lying. You're misrepresenting. Because you're a man. They obviously see that he's a physical man, but you make yourself God. If you write in your scriptures or you take notes and or good notes, from 31 all the way to 42, every time the word Father is there, capital F or lowercase f. And every time the word God or gods is there, capital G or lowercase g. In the original text, they're not different words. I think it's really important as you read this, because especially when he's about to quote from Psalm 82, Jesus is, to understand that he's not talking about, when he says capital G God, he's not saying Yahweh or Elohim, like specific, unique divinity names. When he says God, it's actually the word theos, T-H-E-O-S, theos, which theos and ology, a study of theology, is just simply the study of God or the study of divinity, the study of other in that regard. And all Jesus is saying throughout here, in fact, all they said right here was this, you're being a man and you're making yourself theos. It's just important. Just follow with me. You'll see why I point that out. So Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law? I said you are gods. That's Psalm, Becca, can you put up that Psalm? This is where Jesus is quoting this from. And Jesus, you know, how much did Jesus know? He didn't go through the normal seminary and academia that they went through. Did he know everything? Did he have what they had? Psalm 82:6, in context, I can't give you all the context right now. You can read it. You are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Jesus pointed this because it was not, listen, this is so important. I didn't know this until I was doing my studies because that sentence Jesus said really was like, ooh, I don't know what I'm going to say about that. Then I looked at the original language and went, oh, and read Psalm 82 in context and went, oh, if you are a person who is part of God's creation, you were a what? Son or daughter of God. He's the one who created me. It was not an abnormal thing to say I'm a son of God. And so in Psalm 82, the psalmist is actually saying this. He says, you are God's. You are sons of the Most High, all of you. You are sons of God. And in this context, when Jesus is teaching, he's just talking about being a son, as in not some divine status, but literally like my son's name is Liam, a son like that. And God being theos, divine. So he's actually saying, why are you having a problem with me saying I'm a son of God? Because so are you. Why do you want to kill me for that? Your law that you fight for, that you're trying to stone me because of, actually says this. You know this. These Pharisees and scribes, they would have had the Old Testament memorized. So they know exactly what he's talking about. And if you ever look at the scriptures and you don't see that Jesus goes, in Psalm 82, verse 6, it says, it's because they knew it so well and they didn't have chapters and verses broken up. They had these things memorized. So he says, I said you are gods, verse 35, if he called them gods to whom the word of God came, meaning the Old Testament, and scripture cannot be broken, it can't be unchanged, it has to be this perfect revelation of God, what do you say of him who the Father consecrated? Same thing here, it's pater, as in paternal. Every time Father, it's not talking about Elohim, like Elohim, like God creator. It's not talking about Yahweh, the ineffable, tetragrammaton, Yud-Heh-Vah-Heh in the Hebrew. It's not talking about any of those things. The Father, why do you say this, that this man that I am, I was set apart by God, consecration means to be set apart, and I was sent into the world. Why are you saying that I am blaspheming? Because I said I'm the Son of God. Right here, I know it's capital, but all that is the same word that you could describe your son, and God is theos. So he's not elevating himself here, and he's just defending what he was saying. If I'm not doing the work, now this is the most important thing though. So here's the issue. They couldn't get past that statement because they were intellectual thinkers. They weren't listening. They genuinely were not listening because this is the most important part of what Jesus said right here, and they don't hear it. Verse 37 is the most important passage. It's the most important verse that we have this morning. Soon. If I am not doing the works of my Father, same thing, paternal. If I'm not doing the works of my Father, then don't believe me. Okay, pause. Jesus, we didn't pull out our weapons to kill you because of the works you're doing. It's not your miracles. We have an issue that you did a miracle on a day you shouldn't be doing a miracle, because your miracle caused somebody to break the Sabbath. They did work. That shouldn't happen. There's no way that our God in heaven, there's no way your Father would tell you to do that if your Father was a good law abider. So Jesus says, listen, if I'm not doing the works of my Father, then don't believe me. And they know his works were divine. In fact, Nicodemus came and said, you're a good teacher. Like, you're other than. You're a greater teacher. You're different than anybody who's come before you. And he just keeps pointing back. He's like, well, I'm only different because what you're seeing is me obeying my Father. So if you're impressed with me, it's because my Father is the one who's worthy of being honored. Then he says, but verse 38, if I do them, even though you do not believe me, if I do amazing works, if you have no issues with the miracles and you go like, that is divine. Listen, Jesus is about to get himself out of the way. If I do these works, even though you don't believe in me, even though I'm a distraction to you, even though I don't look the way you thought, I don't hang out with you, I don't affirm the things you do, just believe the works. You know what he's doing right now? He's being extremely gracious. He just brought the law. He was law. He was truth. And he said, well, listen, you guys actually call yourselves sons and daughters of Father. So do I. There's no issue with what I was saying because I truly am. But if I truly am, so are you. You have no problem with that. And you know that because you know the word. And they're like, you know, they were like this and they're kind of like, okay. And he goes, so if you're not killing me because of the works. No, we're not. Okay, well then for the sake of the works, then not me. You don't listen, you don't have to accept me. You don't have to look like me. You don't have to act like me. You don't have to hang out with the people I hang out with. You don't have to get down on the ground with adulterous women and do, like, stop looking at me and saying, hey, you don't look at me. You don't look like me, so I can't worship you. You don't look like me because we are the expression of worship and holiness and devout honor. And you're not like that. We don't like your style. Your worship style is not what we like. Who you hang out with is not who we like. He's like, okay. For a moment then, don't get offended by my Myers-Briggs. Don't get offended by the way I'm revealing. Would you just look at the things that are revealed? Because you just said that you're not stoning me for those. So then, could you simply, grace. I mean, this is just grace. This is just grace. Would you just take the signs and wonders that you've seen, that you've said are of God, and would you believe that God is moving on earth? Would you just believe that? I do not think Jesus is doing a cut and paste for him, by the way. So stay with me. Meaning, you don't have to believe in me. You can just believe in power and energy and everything will be okay. That's not what I think he's saying. He says that you may know, I want you to believe the works, that you may know and understand that the paternal, the Father, is in me and I am in him. It's actually not the word Father paternal right there. It's actually just person, that I am in him, masculine. Again, they sought to arrest him. So at that point, they dropped the stones because they were duped. They couldn't handle an argument with him. Like, let's just cuff this guy. We got to get smarter people to argue with him because he just wipes us out. Verse 40, he went away across the Jordan to the place where John had been baptizing. This is John, his best friend, writing this account. John the Baptist was a different guy, and John the Baptist at this time in history was already beheaded. But listen to this. And he went to that place. Look at this, verse 41. And many people came to Jesus when he was there, and they said this. Here's their testimony. So Jesus is doing his thing, and here's the conversations around Jesus. Check it out. They're all like, man, you know, John didn't ever do any sign. No eyes were opened. No cripples were cared for. Man, he never, like, stepped in, and he didn't, like, care for an adulterous woman. He didn't talk to a Samaritan woman who was an outsider and tell her all of the secrets of her life. He didn't do any of that. But everything that John talked about has come true in this man. And look what happens. Verse 42, and many believed in Jesus there. You have such a, like, a strange group of people. You've got the most wise, studied PhDs of all things God, all things studied religion, and literally God in the flesh is in front of them, and they're ridiculing his style. In some ways, just bear with me for a moment, they're ridiculing his introversion, his judgment, his way in which he's doing things they've got a problem with. And do you know what it really was? Jesus, you do not look like us. And we were ready for the Messiah to come and go, man, you guys are awesome. Can I hang out with you? Instead, Jesus went, you guys are making it so difficult for people to believe in God. Please shut your mouths and change your minds. But he was, do you see how gracious he was with the people who had weapons in their hands to kill him? He's like, guys, what could you believe then for today? I know it's hard when you see me. I'm not like you. But what about these other things? Don't get stuck on me, my personality, and how I do things. Could you at least look at the works and recognize that they're from God? Could we start there? I don't think Jesus was compromising, saying, don't believe me, because later he says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father yet but through me. But for the people who wanted to kill him, he said, all right, well, where could we start a conversation? What could we agree on? Not because he was going to go, like, let's just figure out where we agree on, everything will be okay. Jesus isn't like that. He's not like, oh, truth doesn't matter. Truth does matter, but he wants to get a conversation where somebody can actually engage in a convo. And I think as people, we get so set on our truth that we don't even know how to be gracious. Some of us are so gracious, we don't even know what truth is. Listen how Randy Alcorn, I think you could do now. Listen how Randy Alcorn, in his book, The Paradox, The Grace and Truth Paradox, listen to how he describes grace and truth in Jesus. There's three slides, and then there'll be a fourth one that sums it up real well. A paradox is an apparent contradiction. That's what a paradox ends up being. Grace and truth aren't really contradictory, though. Jesus didn't switch on truth and then turn it off so he could switch on grace. Both are permanently switched on in Jesus. Both should be switched on in us. Truth without grace breeds a self-righteous legalism that poisons the church and pushes the world from Christ. I watch this on a daily basis. Grace without truth breeds moral indifference and keeps people from seeing their need for Christ. I see this on a daily basis too. But I also will say, the things I'm seeing in this church, they're grace and truth, and it's beautiful. Not that we're perfect, but I'm watching the Spirit work, and it's amazing. Attempts to soften the gospel by minimizing truth keep people from Jesus. It's really ultimately what they do. Attempts to toughen the gospel by minimizing grace keep people from Jesus as well. It's not enough for us to offer grace or truth. We must offer both. Now listen, here's a, for some of you who are learners, like that was too much for me kind of thing. Let me give you one sentence. Two sentences. When we offend everybody, well, I'm just a truth guy and everybody's offended by me. It's because we've taken off the truth mantle, or we've taken on the truth mantle and we don't even own a grace mantle, meaning we're just clothed in that. When we offend no one, it's because we've watered down the truth in the name of grace. Listen, when I talk about like Jesus, I just genuinely think, I hope you guys can all understand this. Jesus was not compromising himself so people could come to him. He was genuinely trying to draw people to the Father, and he said, stop. I know it sounds a little crazy for a moment because we're about to sing like Jesus be the center of everything, and he is. But for these people, he said, hey, you're so focused on me and how you judge me and think about me. Why don't you just look to the works? Why don't you look to the things that are impossible to describe and realize where those came from? Could you trust those and then perhaps keep watching me? Jesus was a lot of, he was a guy of like, hey, come follow me, come follow me, come follow me. And people could jump on at any time. He was easy to jump off of. And he was difficult to follow in this regard. These people didn't humble themselves. We're not like, in the last 30 years, there's a group called the Jesus Seminar. I'm sure some of you who've done scholarly work know who the Jesus Seminar is. The Jesus Seminar was a group of scholars that set out to read back through specifically the New Testament and find out who Jesus truly was. And their process was this. They had four beads. And if there was a statement in the scriptures that was actually something Jesus said, they would give a red bead to it. And if there was one that was in question, they put a different color. It'll be up on the screen. You can see the color coordination. It's not a big deal for this point, but that way you can see and be familiar. They put a gray bead. They put a pink bead. They put a black bead if it's something that Jesus didn't say. They went through the scriptures, and you know what their conclusion was? I mean, Time Magazine even, I mean, it got global attention. Time Magazine actually was talking about the Jesus Seminar and said, like, hey, we're about to actually see a historical Jesus. Do you know what the historical Jesus of the Jesus Seminar produced? A new version of the Bible that only contained 20% of Jesus. That's their conclusion. In fact, here's the Lord's Prayer. Here's what they were confident that Jesus said in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, it's up in red. He said, our Father. That's what they're positive he said. That's it. That's all. That's the only thing that they're confident made the cut. That's not what we're talking about when we said Jesus was removing himself so that they could just believe what they could believe. They were positive that he didn't say, be rescued from the evil one. They're positive he didn't say, our Father, with a description of in the heavens. They're positive he didn't say, enact your will on earth as you have in heaven. I mean, that's one of our banner statements of this church is, may your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as in heaven. These scholarly, really, really, really intellectual people said, hey, we've looked through the scriptures. Here's a reliable one. Yeah, only 20% of it's there. They wanted to find the human Jesus. So every single thing that was divine or potentially divine was removed. Is not what Jesus was doing and is never what this church will do. What's getting in the way of you believing and trusting in Jesus today? Some of us are deeply feeling oriented and it would be wise to think too. And some of us are so like, teach, study. It would be good to be feeling oriented as well. My mentors taught me that grace and truth is like a right leg and a left leg. The scriptures and the spirit are a right leg and a left leg. Some churches drag the spirit behind them like we got to, but and some churches are all expression and expression and feelings and all that, and like, truth, who cares about it? This feels so good. It's gotta be God. We're not boasting in any way, but we want to be a church that is led by the Holy Spirit. When the Holy Spirit leads us, it's sound truth. I believe that theology crescendos with doxology. Right teaching gives us a foundation to dance on. A healthy relationship builds a foundation that when I officiate a wedding, I'm happy, I'm excited, they're gonna dance, they're gonna celebrate. Why? Because this is good and this is true, so let's be emotionally excited about it. A good theologian doesn't forfeit theology or doxology. In a healthy church that's walking with God, you'll see both. So that when we're emotional, you'll know why. When you lift a hand, you'll know why. When we're studying the scriptures and I start to cry, I go, oh, I think both just happened in me. That's good. It's not just for the sake of you I ask that question. That's why I ask this last question and then we respond together. What about you is standing in the way of others believing and trusting in Jesus through you? I'm not telling you to not be the personality you are. I tried to do that for 15 years, try to not be me, and I literally felt like I was dying every day as a person. I genuinely did. I really did, sincerely. Because this is what I do for my profession, and I was literally putting on a completely different personality to feed the people who valued it that way, and I just felt disingenuous. But this church still is not an expression of me. It's beholding Christ and presenting him as the center, and we come and respond appropriately. So I do want to just go on the record and say, however you decide to worship, I affirm. But if you're coming to worship not asking God how he wants you to think about him and respond to him, I don't affirm that. See, I'm never going to force you to kneel or stand or sing or dance. But if I were to say, hey, how come you didn't kneel? Not, no pressure, like, ah, I just didn't want to. I go, ah, I don't respect that. I'll be that kind and direct. If you said, like, I was praying about it and God just... He just, I really feel like he told me to sit in the chair. I go, that's awesome. That's awesome. So let's be people who do what we do because we truly believe that the scriptures are leading us in that direction. Let's be people who are led by the Spirit, not justifying ourselves by like, I can do whatever I want, and not trying to condemn others going like, that's what the scriptures say you gotta do. Be very, very watchful lest you be the people that Jesus is rebuking and you're over compensation. God, all that's been said through my mouth today, may the things that are of you, nothing more, nothing less, remain.